The opinions expressed on the ACB Media Network are those of the respective program contributors and cannot be assumed to serve as endorsements of products or views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McKellen. The American Council of the Blind has a new executive director. ACB's new executive director is Scott Thornhill. Scott took office on March 18th. The ACB board voted Scott in to lead the over 60-year-old organization. Scott is here to talk about his experience and plans for leading ACB. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you so much, Brian. Much appreciated. Happy to be here.
Glad you're here. Tell us more about yourself.
Well, I have retinitis pigmentosa. I'll start with that. So RP for short, but I was diagnosed at 8, and at the age of 15, I was told I'd be blind by 40. So I jokingly say I try to overachieve. So I hit it around 36, but I actually met the legal definition of blindness well before that. But beyond sort of the vision components of who I am, I grew up, was born in Virginia and grew up in North Carolina, went to college, played football and went to school at a small Division III school in North Carolina. And I kind of did it in that order, played football and went to college. But I learned after a while that it was more important to get the education than it was playing ball. But I was losing my vision all along that time. And so it was an adventure, a very challenging struggle, as many of us have been through and that have had vision challenges. And but after college, I had a couple of different career paths that I explored. And then ultimately, my wife and I started a real estate brokerage that we've had for about 20 years that she continues to run. But about 5.5 years ago, I went into a public policy role with Alpha Point, which is part of the National Industries for the Blind Network and the Ability One program. And then after doing that for that period of time and having a good amount of success, thankfully, the opportunity with the American Council of the Blind opened up and it was a really good fit. I'm excited to be a part of a membership organization and all of the things that we can do moving forward.
We're going to get into your past experience in a little bit, but what inspired you to become the American Council of the Blind's executive director?
You know, I've known so many members of ACB for a long time. I knew some of the previous staff members and friends of theirs, but really, what attracted me is the position that ACB is in right now. I truly believe that this organization is set to be a leader, even more so, a leader in the blindness community, and in a lot of the advocacy and the work that we're doing to make the playing field level and to move things forward for people who are blind or with low vision. And so I believe ACB is uniquely positioned because of the membership, but also because of just the partnerships that we have and the collaborative spirit that we've approached issues with in the past, that we are seen in that light. And I'm proud to be leading ACB and believe that we are in a position to take care of some of those issues as we move ahead.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So in the ACB press release, you mentioned that the director position, it's a privilege. And that's the honor to lead the organization with a rich history like ACB. Tell us more about your role as executive director. What are you going to be doing?
Yeah, well, as executive director, I lead the staff, which we are a small but mighty staff, as I like to say. But so we don't have a large number of individuals. We have obviously, you know, full-time staff members, some part-time staff members, some consultants or contractors that we work with as well. But really for me, it is an honor and it is a privilege. And I'll tell you why, because anytime you get to lead an organization, to me, it's humbling. And it is, I think of the past and the people that have been so influential over the over 6 years of ACB's history. And just the work that they've done to lay that groundwork. And for me, as the term would go, right, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. And so I'm looking at the history, the people that are the members that I'm learning from every day that are just working incredibly hard in their state, that, you know, all of the 66 affiliates that we have. And it that's why I used those words, an honor and a privilege, because for people to have that sort of confidence in me to lead the organization and to carry forward the messaging that we have, I'm very humbled by it.
ACB strength comes from that combination of the larger blind community and its supporters and members like you and me.
That's right.
So what impactful results do you look forward to achieving in the coming years?
So in the coming years, several things. One is a lot of organizations are struggling with how to sort of engage younger individuals, not just organizations in the blindness field or the blindness community. A lot of organizations in general are struggling with how to engage younger individuals because the communication methods can be a little bit different or a lot different than what some of us in, let's just say, decades may have used for communication and things like that. So one of the things I'm looking forward to is how do we engage younger individuals who are blind or with low vision to really be able to reach their full potential. A lot of them have had a device in their hands and shortly after they were born. And so technology is a big piece of that. I know that our next generation affiliate is doing a lot of work in that space. Also in terms of diabetes and some of the chronic diseases that cause blindness, I really want us to be a leader in how we can help individuals who either can avoid some of those situations through exercise. We have a Get Moving campaign, also through dietary items, but also those that are living with diabetes and other chronic diseases that have affected their vision. How can we better support them? Employment is a big one, and I've had a number of people mention that to me. And coming from the National Industries for the Blind, sort of part of this community, workforce development and employment, and how we can get more people working. Because while there's a set of people who are either their age or for multiple disabilities or the reasons don't want to work or can't, I do believe there certainly is a percentage and a healthy percentage of individuals who would like to work, but they may have given up because they just don't think it's possible. And I truly want to inspire and inform and let those individuals know that there are opportunities. And so partnering with companies and other entities that want to hire people, And we have a pool of individuals who are talented and just on the sidelines. And so those are some of the major areas that I'm looking at right now.
So for the past 3 years, you served as Alpha Point's Director of Public Policy. What did you do in that Director of Public Policy position? And what's Alpha Point?
Yeah. So I was with Alpha Point for a total of about 5.5 years. And so the first probably, I guess, year and a half or so, I was the senior manager of public policy and then became the director of public policy. I really didn't change a whole lot of what I was doing. It was a title change. But so the work that I was doing was anything from working on legislation. We had one bill in particular that was very important to Alpha Point and some other organizations within the National Industries for the Blind Network and Ability One as a whole. So Source America, which is part of Ability One as well. Source America works with individuals with significant disabilities. And then NIB, as I've mentioned a couple of times, is more on the blindness side or is on the blindness side. So we got a bill passed that saved Alpha Point about 75 jobs and about $10 to $12 million of revenue per year. So that was a huge item that I worked on with other individuals from other organizations as well. Also, successful job placement. So talking to companies about how they could employ people who are blind and be successful in that, companies that were motivated to do that. I did a lot of advocacy. We had multiple locations. Alpha Point, as I've said, probably more than once now, but Alpha Point is a member, an NPA or a nonprofit agency as part of the National Industries for the Blind Network with a headquarters in Kansas City, Missouri, and also a location in New York City in the borough of Queens. And so I traveled quite a bit. I did a lot of networking, going to conferences, meeting with other leaders from other organizations and really building up those partnerships for multiple reasons, for employment, but also for funding from state funding, federal funding, local funding. I was seeking government funding on all levels. So a lot of it was spent trying to get capital campaigns completed and programming funds and all kinds of things like that. A lot of tours, did a lot of tours of our facilities, bringing elected officials through and other members of the community, just so they could see the work that was being done by people who are blind, because there's so much misunderstanding or lack of understanding about the capabilities of individuals with vision challenges.
So now, why don't you talk about your real estate brokerage background?
Yeah, so it's interesting. As my wife and I had sold an in-home services business, and we got into real estate because it was a good fit, and I'd always been interested in real estate and still am. But we started our real estate brokerage in the 2004-2005 timeframe, and we were affiliated, my wife still is, with Keller Williams Realty, but our Thornhill Realty Group brokerage has been over that 20-year period. And so I enjoyed real estate quite a bit. I was still at the beginning of that, still struggling with my vision loss and how to handle that. And frankly, I was embarrassed and ashamed, even though I had no reason to be. So I tried to hide it. And what I would do was memorize the documents so that when we met with people, I didn't have to try to read something, because I couldn't. So I was using a screen reader, but also for a period of time there, which is it's funny looking back on it. It wasn't funny in the moment, but our 5-year-old son in the 2007 timeframe was, as my vision was getting worse, was reading real estate contracts to me. And I've often said that it's not a great idea to have a 5-year-old, 5 or 6-year-old reading real estate contracts to you as the broker. But boy, his vocabulary was tremendous. There's not a lot of 5 or 6-year-olds that can, where to for and here upon and words like that. You don't hear a lot of 5 and 6-year-olds using those. But he got bored very quickly, I can tell you. The real estate contracts grew from 3 pages to, I believe, about 12 or 13 pages by the time I wasn't practicing any longer. And you get a couple of pages in, and a 5 or 6-year-old attention span is about gone. So wasn't a great way to sort of handle that. And I had to learn different things. That's when I learned to use the JAWS screen reader and got my cane and learned about orientation and mobility and all of that. But my wife and I would work real estate together. I handle a lot of the negotiations, the phone work, the lead generation. Negotiations. I really enjoyed quite a bit of that. She, with the showings, of course, she was much better at talking to people about paint colors and how things looked. Wasn't terribly helpful there, but I've always been about relationships and building relationships, and not from a selfish standpoint of what can I get out of this, but really from a win-win scenario. And so I've carried that. I've tried to carry that in no matter what I've done. And so whether it was in real estate, where we had a saying, was win-win or no deal. So even in negotiations, right, you don't want to fight so hard that you get everything on your side and the other side feels like they lost, because then it can create a very difficult closing in the real estate world where you get down, and anytime you might need a favor towards the very end and the other side doesn't want to do it because they feel like they just got snookered. But and then as I moved into my public policy role with AlphaPoint, it was the same way. When I would work with these elected officials' offices and the staff members, right, I didn't just want to work with them to get money out of them or a piece of legislation. I wanted AlphaPoint at that time to be the go-to. If they had questions about working with people with disabilities or what could be done for another piece of legislation, or, hey, how do you think this is going to go over if we do this? It may not have been something that even really affected us as an organization. I still wanted us to be the go-to because I saw that as a win-win. And I see that the same thing with the American Council of the Blind. So as we partner with corporations and we partner with other nonprofits, it's not just so that ACB can get bigger and ACB can rule everything. That's not the goal per se, but it's a win-win, right? How do we work together to further the lives of individuals with vision challenges, and how can the corporations and other nonprofits work with ACB to do that? So that's the approach I like to take.
And you must have sold a lot of homes with the real estate brokerage business, right?
Yeah, quite a few. And I will tell you, it got to the point where I just, it wasn't for me something that, real estate is an awesome career path, and you're helping people buy or sell, most cases, the largest investment they will ever have. And so it is very meaningful. And I had to remind myself at times that while as an agent or a broker, you may, you know, do 20, 30, 40, 50 of these transactions in a given year. That individual that you're working with, or that family you're working with, may only do this two or three times in their lives. And so it's so meaningful to them, in that situation, that you can't look at it as just another number or just another transaction. It's a person, a family, it's memories. It's the house where they had their holidays and where the birthdays were celebrated, and maybe children were born and brought home to that house for the first time, or whatever it might be. So there was a lot to think about there. I had a colleague of ours one time tell me that I was having a particularly difficult day in real estate, and he stopped by to say hello, and I thought of him as a mentor, and he said, "You do understand we get paid to take care of other people's problems, right?" I said, "I understand that." And so when I took that to heart, that's what we got paid to handle other people's problems so that they didn't have to handle them. I've carried that forward with me in other things that I've done as well. When I've had a particularly difficult day or situation, is to say, okay, what is my role in this regard, right? So even when someone calls me now and there's an issue, right, when their apartment complex won't let them have their service dog, in the apartment, or whatever the situation might be, is that you understand that you're now advocating, just as I was advocating in real estate or advocating as a director of public policy. It's that advocating really for the members of ACB and for the larger blindness community. So yeah, it all kind of works together.
Now, let's get back to your vision. You were diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa at 8 years old.
I was.
By the time you became 15, you were told by the doctors that you were going to go blind at 40.
Mm-hmm.
Did that happen?
It did. I never, for example, I never drove legally. I always put in the legally because I did drive illegally because I was prideful. And as a teenage boy, I just thought, you got to drive. And so I had some friends that had car, I would drive. But I do like to point out the statute of limitations has expired, so no one can come after me for those indiscretions in my youth. But I was playing sports and I didn't want to tell anybody. I was so embarrassed. I had no reason to be, right? I mean, it's an eye disease. It's not anything I could control, but I just knew sort of how the world was going to look at me more than likely. And I'll tell you what it became. It was a reflection of my own misunderstanding and how I looked at other people. And so oftentimes, right, what we think or how we perceive how we are going to be treated is because we ourselves may have done that to someone else. And I had to come to terms with that I didn't think that a person who is blind could do very much. So, of course, I didn't want to be that person. I equated my diagnosis as almost like a death sentence. Like there was a part of me that was dying and I was mourning the fact that this part of me was dying. And I would think, what am I going to be able to do? What does my future look like? And I went through a very down time, a very, very difficult time. And thankfully, my wife, Jane, who is amazing, she encouraged me and at times very lovingly encouraged me. And frankly, at times a little more sternly encouraged me that I couldn't stay in the house, even though we owned a business where I could work from home and didn't have to leave, that I'm a very people-oriented individual. I enjoy being around people. I'm an extrovert. And so therefore, it was painful to me to not leave the house. I was concerned about missing a handshake or tripping over a curb. And, people I'd gone to high school with or even college with who didn't know that I had this visual impairment, I didn't want them to know because I thought they would think less of me. And frankly, I did experience people, not the individuals I'm talking about with high school and college, but just other people, when they would find out, they would get closer to me when they would talk. They would talk louder. I was like, guys, it's not the hearing, it's the vision. And so people often don't know what to do. I have experienced that probably 99% of the people I encounter do want to help. They just don't know how. And so I have learned so much. And a lot of that learning was me understanding better what people who are blind can do. And that's why serving on a board at Industries of the Blind in Greensboro, North Carolina, where I'd been living for quite a while, serving on the board there as the only blind individual on that board, I got to experience what people who are blind could actually do. And Industries of the Blind is part of the National Industries for the Blind. And so once I realized that, I really felt again more, you know, embarrassed that I didn't understand what true capabilities of individuals with vision challenges were. And as I learned more, I realized that I could do more. And I didn't have to limit myself either with technology and other things and learn the skills, rehabilitation skills. And it really opened up a lot of doors for me.
Yeah, you've been active with many organizations, Industries for the Blind, the National Association for the Employment of People Who Are Blind, and Vision Serve Alliance.
You even, yes.
Hold some big degrees. You got your post-baccalaureate certificate in nonprofit management from the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. Mm-hmm. And you also have a Master of Public Administration from the University of North Carolina in Wilmington.
Right.
Well, all this experience you've gotten in those degrees has now led to this point. And even ACD Board President Deb Cook Lewis, who has also been on this program, says that you bring a lot of infectious enthusiasm and energy to the new job. How do you want that energy and enthusiasm to influence the fellow ACB members, colleagues, and yes, the bigger staff? Yeah.
For me, I am focused on the future, but not in lieu of the present. And I say it that way because I want, I call it the bees, all the different organizations for the blind, right? We and I don't have to name them. We all kind of know the different organizations, that most of them that work or serve people, have missions related to people who are blind. I want us to find the places where we can pull in the same direction. So I'm hoping that engagement, that collaborative nature, the networking, I don't want to be Pollyannish about this and say everything's going to be perfect and we won't have any disagreements. But I do want to find the places where we can work together to really further the opportunities for people who are blind or with low vision, for employment in transportation and education. There's so many different areas where we still have work to do. Accessible currency, we've been working a lot on that. So for me, that's what I'm looking at, is how can we all work together within our membership of ACB? That's one thing. We have all of our affiliates. Look, I want unity. I want us to work together on the things we agree on and not spend time really, I'll say, wasting time sort of quabbling about, you know, maybe some things that we don't agree with here and there. But where do we unite? Where do we agree in that mission of moving forward as a group of people that are living with some vision challenges in a world that was built for people with sight? And so as we make those things better, universal design, things like the curb cutouts we've talked about, right? It was originally for people in wheelchairs. Now a lot of people use them. Voice texting, originally for people with vision loss. Now almost everybody likes to do it. So where are those other areas where we can work together as a society and as these organizations focused on serving people who are blind to sort of make that universal design more prevalent, so that as we navigate our way through the world, right, we're not asking for special things to be done per se. We're just asking for the same opportunities that other people have. And I believe that bringing that message to other organizations and even into our own membership, that we can all pull in the same direction. And we're going to have our moments where we're going to disagree, but those need to be short and they need to be times of learning and understanding. I'm going to tell you another one. Win-win and or no deal was one to live by. Another one that I look at that I'm really working hard on, and I want to encourage others to work on, is live in curiosity, not judgment. So if we can sort of be curious about why someone else is saying the things they're saying or acting the way they're acting, instead of judging them for it, I think we can learn a little bit about each other and maybe agree to disagree on a few things and continue moving forward with the places we agree. So that's what I'm hopeful about.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think I've probably said more than you expected me to, maybe with the time, but I appreciate the opportunity so much. This has been great.
Well, thanks for joining us, Scott. Congratulations. And we wish you the best of luck in leading ACB.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Before we go, listeners, I welcome your comments on this program. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on X at Speak Out Blind or Speak Out for the Blind. You can also check out my website at speakingoutfortheblind.weebly.com. More information on today's show is posted there. Just look under the list of episodes and show news tab. And my show archive is at speaking-out-for-the-blind.pinecast.co. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening. And remember to speak out.